KALW.
To be able to do a play that's actually in Spanish allows me to go to other parts of my ser.
A small theater company in San Francisco is creating outside the dominant language.
One thing that we want to normalize is that you can do theater in other languages other than English.
Today, the liberation artists and audiences feel when theater speaks to them in their native tongue. Plus, an update on the Oakland A's in their last season in the Bay.
The group that owns the Coliseum now is going to make a really good play at the A's. And why wouldn't they, right? You know, and why wouldn't the A's listen?
It's the next episode of Foul Ball. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. If you live in San Francisco and you don't speak English, you might have a hard time watching a play or going to the movies. In an art scene that centers English language productions, La Lengua Teatro is devoted to breaking down linguistic barriers. Their powerful Spanish language performances focus on issues that directly impact the local immigrant community. KLW's Wendy Reyes has the story.
Perfect. All right, let's circle up really fast.
Inside of a small studio in the Mission District of San Francisco, a cast of four actors prep for rehearsal. Their director, Samuel Prince, guides them into the scene.
Are there any questions that you or discoveries that you made during the, you know, the 2 days that we were off while you were working on the scene?
I think I say something about el pobre no da pie con bola, mm-hmm. y yo con mi inglés goleta. What is it that I'm saying when I say este pie?
That means that you don't get anything right.
They're going over Puerto Rican idioms. Opening night is just a few weeks away, so the actors finish locking down the nuance of each line before they begin.
Let's start. Let's do it.
At the far end of the empty room, two chairs are set up next to each other to resemble a bus stop. The room is quiet as the actors settle into their chairs. Iris Diaz and Diana Diaz get into character.
Tanta protesta no resuelve nada.
They play two Puerto Rican women who start chatting at a bus stop. Their conversation quickly centers on politics.
No tuve más remedio que votar por los mismos.
Pero perdone, opciones.
This rehearsal is for a play performed by La Lengua Teatro, a small Spanish language theater production company in San Francisco. Commissioning this play is part of Virginia Blanco's larger vision.
I'm the founding artistic director and executive director of La Lengua Teatro en Español.
As the artistic director, Virginia gets to decide what programs her company produces. The plays illuminate issues that affect the immigrant and Latina community here in the Bay. This fall, La Lengua will debut a story by playwright Tere Martinez about the intricate relationship between the U.S. and Puerto Rico.
We have a play, a world premiere of Paradise, and Paradise is a slice of life. It's like if we're like flies on a wall hearing what's going on in 2022 in Puerto Rico and how they're being affected from all the taxes policies and how that impacts in all their daily life.
The socio-political themes of the show, Paradise, are a point of connection for the Latina diaspora in the Bay. But it's not just the motifs of La Lengua's plays that serve as a bridge to the community. The theater presents these stories to the people affected by these issues in a language they understand, literally. It's a bilingual program, mostly in Spanish, with a little bit of English. This includes translations projected on stage to alleviate any language barriers. In San Francisco, where 1 in 10 people speak Spanish, it may be surprising to learn that Spanish language theater is still a rarity. There's a handful of Latina companies that produce Latin American work, but most of that is still in English. La Lengua is the only company in San Francisco dedicating their efforts to produce programs in Spanish.
One thing that we want to normalize is that you can do theater in other languages other than English.
Virginia worked in theater in Argentina, where she's from. She says theater was a popular pastime across generations, and there were lots of chances to see American shows. But when she moved to the U.S., she quickly learned that plays from Latin America were not as common.
I didn't find a place where I could jump in as a Spanish speaker, theater maker. So I was amazed that having such a huge Latinx community, how was possible that there was not a theater company presenting theater pieces regularly?
In Spanish. Virginia took note of this disparity. And even after learning English to up her chances at a job, she had a difficult time adjusting to the power dynamics of being an immigrant looking for work in theater.
The sad thing about that is being an immigrant, in a way you have internalized that that's your place, that you don't have the power to speak up, or maybe just ignore that feeling that you're being stigmatized because of your accent, because of how you look.
Because of this experience, Virginia wanted to improve conditions for other immigrants in theater. Getting a seat at the producer's table was a step in the right direction. But it wasn't enough.
There are people that are not interested in the things that we need to discuss. I think the solution is creating your own table because I've been waiting for years to find a Spanish-speaking theater company, a professional here in San Francisco, and I couldn't find it.
So she built one herself with La Lengua Teatro.
¿Sabes lo que sería de este país sin los americanos? ¿Usted sabe lo que sería de este país? Corruption.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you.
Back in the studio, the conversation in the bus stop scene is getting heated. Samuel, the director, steps in to emphasize the gravity of this moment in the play.
So that line has to be like, you know, more like, pero tú sabes lo que sería esta isla sin los americanos?
Yeah.
You know, it's more of a...
Part of the process of running a Spanish language theater means hiring artists who speak the language. You need a director who can communicate notes regarding tone and inflection, a stage manager who can help read lines, and actors who can flow between languages.
My name is Iris, but I answer to Iris also, so Iris Diaz, and I am playing the role of Tata.
This is Iris' first time performing in Spanish. She says it's been an opportunity to get closer to her culture.
To be able to do a play that's actually in Spanish allows me to go to other parts of my ser, something that I hadn't brought out before.
Her ser, part of her being. Virginia mentions that many artists who come through her company often express a similar sentiment.
Someone told me I felt there was something missing from my identity, and it was this, performing in Spanish.
This opportunity goes beyond the artist. Audiences get a chance to engage with ideas or concepts often missed in mainstream English-speaking white American theater. Like when La Lengua commissioned a play in Navajo by Blossom Johnson, a Diné playwright.
The playwright decided not to use English supertitles, so they wanted the audience experience the language and the story as it is.
Many of the audience members left before the play was even over. For those who remained till the end, they participated in a talkback where they revealed their discomfort.
And some of them described the whole process of being exposed to a language we don't understand at all. The arc of the from discomfort to introspection to why I'm feeling so
confused, lost, excluded. Feelings that so many monolingual immigrants who don't speak English experience daily. That's another important part of La Lengua's mission, exposing new audiences to the artistry of non-English playwrights.
Ay, ¿cómo estás? ¿Cómo estás, muchacho? Ay.
In rehearsal, everyone is focused and passionate about the work, but nerves start to show as they perfect an emotional moment in the scene.
¿Por qué?
Héctor Lugo, who plays Quique, forgets his line.
You know why you forgot your first line?
Because you're in the emotion. You're in the emotion of everything.
Yeah. Let me stop you actually before, because this is going to get even more intense. Let's go back here.
The cast is quick to support their castmate. It's an encouraging environment for Hector, who is a new performer. He feels comfortable in this role due to the nature of the piece.
Oh, I feel very comfortable because I live in multiple languages, you know.
Hector hopes that audience members who share his experience can find encouragement to celebrate their multiple languages.
I hope that they feel happy that they can be who they are, and particularly those people that speak, like, Spanglish.
For these audiences, stories performed by La Lengua validate their lived experiences. It gives them access to art they're often shut out of due to language barriers.
And I also want, you know, the kids and the youngsters to feel like, yeah, man, you know, I can speak that language anywhere. I can be myself anywhere. I want them to feel like, you know, it's a beautiful reality to live in, you know?
And at La Lengua Teatro, this beautiful multilingual reality takes center stage. In San Francisco, I'm Wendy Reyes for Cross Currents.
La Lengua Teatro's production of Paradise is playing at the Brava Theater in San Francisco through the end of September. Find all the details at klw.org/crosscurrents. As we just heard, artists can sometimes reach deeper into their creative process when they use their native language. Bayview Hunters Point poet Marga Guerrero finds inspiration and healing through bilingual verse. Here's Maria reading her poem, Soy de Acuya.
Ni de aquí. Yo no soy de aquí. This is the third time he's asked, where are you from? I'm too brown for this güero. Dije Maria. And visit Maria, and my last name has too many R's. Soy demasiado para este hombre blanco. Ni de ella. Yo no soy de ella. They look at me kind of funny when English slips out of my tongue, as if to say, ¿Qué chingados haces aquí? I'm too American for Mexicans. There's not enough chile on my food, and I don't always get the joke. Soy muy poco para algunos mexicanos. Ni de acá. Yo no soy de acá. I didn't get the memo that my existence is a transgression. Ahora tiene sentido porque en su diccionario la única definición de queer es extraño. Now it makes sense why I always felt like a stranger in my own home. Soy muy extraña para la gente ignorante. Soy de Acuya. Yo soy de Acuya. I am from the sounds of the 29 bus line taking me from Baker Beach to Pollen Third. Soy de las historias que cuentan mis padres de su niñez en México. I am from the laughter of my queer friends as we find safety in the space we created. Soy del dulce y picoso sabor de un mole casero con ajonjolí tostado. I am from the cracked concrete sidewalks of Baby Hunter's Point, my first home. Soy de los colores de la calle 24 as I make my way to la librería, mi segundo hogar. I am from the warm embrace of my loved ones, the ones who see me for who I am. Ni muy muy, ni tan tan. Just me, just enough. Acuya, una indicación poco precisa, pero real. Soy suficiente para ese lugar.
That was Maria Guerrero reading us her poem Soy de Acuya as part of our series Bay Poets. Find more work from the series at klw.org/baypoets. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. This is the last month the A's will be playing in Oakland. Or is it? Recently, new questions have come up over the move to Sacramento. We'll hear about that drama next, but first, an update on their recent games in the next episode of Foul Ball. Here's host KALW's Sunni Khalid.
The Athletics begin their final homestand at the Coliseum tomorrow night when they host the Yankees for a three-game set. Then they play another three-game series against the defending world champion Texas Rangers before bidding their fans a final farewell. The still Oakland A's spent the better part of a week on the road, playing a pair of series in Chicago, starting on the south side against the woeful White Sox, a team on pace with a chance to finish with the worst record in the history of Major League Baseball.
Game one of a three-game series. The Sox got swept by the Cleveland Guardians to open this homestand, and they have now dropped a club record 15 in a row here at home. Their last home win came a month and a day from tonight against...
In the first game of the series, the A's sent 26-year-old Brady Basso to the mound for his second big league start in search of his first major league win.
Bottom of the first inning, we're scoreless as the 26-year-old Brady Basso goes to work for the A's.
Basso pitched into the sixth inning, blanking the pale hose. Meanwhile, the A's managed to score two runs off Chicago, which was all they needed. And in the bottom of the ninth, once more, it was Miller time.
Mason Miller coming out for the 49th time, ERA of 2.34.
Talk about a guy who can light up the radar gun.
And he docked him up, 102. Andrew Benintendi standing still.
And the A's closer Mason Miller came on to preserve the shutout.
And now here's Corey Lee. Swung on high, pop up, that's going to end it. Left center field, Wilson going out. Gelof is there. Zach, the second baseman, will squeeze it. 25 saves for Mason Miller. And the A's open the weekend on the south side of Chicago with a 2-0 win against the White Sox.
Then, unexpectedly, disaster struck. The Sox beat the A's on Saturday and Sunday, winning consecutive games for the first time in 3 months. As bad as the White Sox are on the field, their off-field prospects are considerably brighter than the A's. They're drawing twice as many fans, and they recently announced plans for a new ballpark in the South Loop. Meanwhile, the A's plan moved to Sacramento for the 2025 regular season in preparation for a proposed move to a new stadium in Las Vegas 3 years later is far from a sure thing. Last week, reports out of Sacramento showed that the Major League Baseball Players Association is balking at having games played on the new artificial turf scheduled to be installed at Sutter Health Park, as well as the minor league accommodations there. And although Major League Baseball says it's a certainty the Athletics will play in Sacramento in 2025, player agent Scott Burrows says the African American Sports and Entertainment Group, the new owners of the Coliseum, are expected to offer A's owner John Fisher attractive terms to return his vagabond team to Oakland in 2026 and beyond. In the last episode, I spoke with Laura Skaggs, a longtime East Oakland resident who grew up near the Coliseum, rooting for the A's when they arrived in Oakland more than a half century ago. This week, I'm speaking with Mark Dembski, a veteran sports reporter with KFBK in Sacramento, who broke the story about the uncertainty surrounding the A's planned move to the state capital next season.
Mark, back in April, John Fisher came up to the fine city of Sacramento and waxed poetic about the intimate confines of Sutter Health Ballpark, where the A's are planning to play next season and 3 seasons after before the planned move to Las Vegas, but not so fast.
I gave Scott Boris a call. He is a Sacramento guy. He's actually from Elk Grove. And I gave him a call and started talking to him about how his clients would feel about the ballpark and the changes that were going to be made. And he had a lot of concerns. Started with the turf that's going to be going in. It's this B1K turf that has water running through it to help keep it cool. The problem, according to Boris anyway, is that this is going to be an outdoor stadium. It gets hot in Sacramento. It's 108, 110 degrees in July, August, and September. So with it being an outdoor stadium, this turf really hasn't been tested, according to Boris. It's at Chase Field in Arizona. That's a climate-controlled indoor stadium. And he thinks it could really get hot on that field. There's going to be 156 baseball games, some of them doubleheaders, right? You got the Rivercats playing in the day, and you got the A's playing at night. And that's, of course, why they have to have artificial surface. But that's where the concerns began in this reporting. Scott Boras, there's no bigger advocate for the players probably in Major League Baseball. He has all the high-profile clients. So it's not just the turf, it's the facilities. They're building a brand new clubhouse for the visitors. You're going to have indoor climate control workout facilities. But again, his concern is, are they big enough? Are they going to be able to house and let these guys get to the ballpark 5-6 hours before the game and get in what they need to do in their pregame warmup, potentially with the Rivercats playing on the field? You're going to have four teams some days at Sutter Health Ballpark. And then he brought up the group that has taken over the ownership of the Coliseum and what they're going to do in terms of making an offer, the African-American Sports and Entertainment Group. And they're going to be the group that needs a tenant. They're really going to come after the A's because the A's then get to keep their TV revenue in the Bay Area, which is going to be a lot more in the millions of dollars of a lot more than what they'll get in Sacramento. All that being said, I reached out to the Players Association because they have to sign off on all these upgrades to the stadium because it's their players, right? It's not just the A's. It's every major league team that comes through there. And I reached out to Major League Baseball. I reached out to the A's. I reached out to Vivek Ramaswamy, who is the owner of the Sacramento Kings and also had purchased recently the Sacramento Rivercats. And he's the one that John Fisher has the deal with to bring the A's to Sacramento for at least three, maybe four seasons. And I didn't get much back. I got a statement from the A's that said the Players Union and Major League Baseball were working together negotiating this deal. And that right away told me, okay, it's if they're still working on a deal, how can it be a done deal? Within 4 hours from when the story hit, I got a response from Major League Baseball that said it is a certainty that the A's will play their 2025 season in Sacramento as planned. That statement, it doesn't say anything past the 2025 season.
When you have a big market team, which is used to the best facilities, like the Yankees, for example, the concerns their players would be voiced through the owners and that the owners are not happy about this move to Sacramento because of some of the concerns that you mentioned. Is it possible that this could be used as a leverage against John Fisher to do what a lot of the fans here say, which is to sell the team?
John Fisher, unfortunately, doesn't have any desires to sell the team, although you could get the commissioner in his ear and ask him to do what's best for baseball, and everything's fine and dandy until there's some problems. And if you get enough major league players and teams complaining about the problems, you never know. I think what's going to happen here is the A's will probably end up playing in Sacramento. Major League Baseball came out and said, without a doubt, they're going to play in 2025 in Sacramento. So, okay, so you do that, but they actually have a deal for beyond that, 26 and 27. And I bring that up because these players are going to go there and they're going to complain about 3 or 4 days in hot Sacramento and the conditions. You're talking about millions of dollars of assets, not only to the players, but to the teams. I want Major League Baseball here in Sacramento, but I got to agree with Scott Boras, and his words were, he doesn't want it this way. And what he means by it is a minor league ballpark that really falls short of major league standards.
What does this say about the A's ownership and about Major League Baseball?
It's a joke. You talk to Major League players, you talk to fans, you talk to other people within the organization, you talk to former owners of the A's as well, and they're a laughingstock. You know what they are is they're ripping off the script from Major League. Remember the movie of the old Cleveland Indians? This almost to a T is what is happening in Oakland
and now could be Sacramento and then Las Vegas. At what point does John Fisher, who's going to have to overpay if he wants at all to get any type of free agent, Scott Boras told me there's no way that players are going to want to come play for the A's without a little extra money. So how that works out, I don't know.
That was reporter Mark Dembski from Sacramento's KFBK speaking with KALW's Sunni Khalid about what could be next for the Oakland A's. Tune in Monday morning at 11. Violence in teen dating relationships may be more prevalent than you might think.
Raising awareness is only half the battle. If there is one lesson I hope to spread about teen dating violence today, is that it's preventable.
The next story from our new season of TBH, our series made by, about, and for teenagers. That's Monday morning at 11. Today's Cross Currents team includes Eliza Peppel, Jan Ramirez, James Rollins, Gonady Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Molly Blair Salyer, Shirin Adil, Hanisha Herjani, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.